Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode, I speak to Mark Kosminski, co-founder of the Blue Mind Approach. We have a really open and honest chat about his divorce experience. Also, there is a trigger warning because we do talk about gambling and also alcohol addiction. And Mark is really open about his experiences with those and even doing getting arrested, being in a car crash, doing a workout in prison, and that being his impetus to make a change, start his recovery process, and then also start helping others. So it's a super vulnerable chat, and I really enjoyed speaking to him. Enjoy. I am joined by Mark Kosminski, co-founder of the Blue Mind Approach. Hi, Mark. Welcome to The Divorce Social.
Samantha, hi. Great to be on. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. How does that feel when I say to you, welcome to The Divorce Social?
Oh, that word just sends shivers through my body. It's I've experienced my own divorce in 2018, and talking about the topic on a regular basis, it's I never thought I'd be having this conversation with you, or even contemplating divorce, right? So that it's, you know, the reality is people don't go into the relationship thinking it'll ever be an option, but here we are. Most relationships end in divorce already, right? I think I saw somewhere that was 100,000 people in the UK got divorced last year, the year before. So, which I know that you were one of, was it during the pandemic? So, yeah, it's crazy, absolutely crazy.
It's quite a big number, isn't it? I just want to go back to, you said the word divorce sends a shiver down your spine. Explain that to me. Why is that?
My divorce was a negative experience, as most people's divorce was. While you do your absolute best to end things amicably, it's a very emotional time, and you're dealing with not only the individual that you're consciously uncoupling from, but the family. We have twin boys as well, who were very young at the time, and you go into a dark place, right? You immerse yourself in self-sabotage, and I think every time you hear the word, or for me personally, it just, that subconscious, it triggers me slightly. But what I've really found helping is in a form of giving back and accelerating the healing process for others by having these types of conversations and coaching people through their divorce, especially men. The reality is men don't talk. We're not encouraged to be vulnerable and authentic.
Well, you absolutely are on this podcast. I actively encourage you to be open and authentic.
Well, that's what I loved about your conversation with Kate Daly over at Amicable. You talked a lot about honesty, and it's vital. It's the truth will set you free, right? And it's I don't know why we don't talk about it more. The fact that people are so scared of telling the truth just because of what someone else might think, and it's all BS. It's if you can be authentic and be vulnerable, have difficult conversations through the Blue Mind brand. We talk a lot about leave nothing important unsaid, and you know, whether it be parenting, relationships, and that triggers me to think about communication, effective communication. I believe that was the number one reason for the breakdown in my marriage, was that our inability to communicate effectively. What I mean by that specifically is expectations of each other, clearly articulate a vision for the future as well. What about yourself? Most of the people I speak to, everyone talks about have the kids, get the house, get the car, get the better house with the gate, get a better car, but no one actually talks about, you know, what do you want life to look like when you're 60, 70, 80. I think that vision for the future, this mutual goal, is so important to discuss at that early stage, but people don't, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a common theme of the people I interview. I mean, I have to say, I am a comedian and performer and oversharer. So, I actually think communication was obviously at times difficult, but it was kind of there in my marriage. It was more that our lifestyles kind of diverged. I think, you know, me being out in the evenings and him working 9 to 5 didn't really match up. But it's interesting you talk about communication and you say that was the breakdown of your marriage. Do you think you started to learn these tools about being open and vulnerable after the divorce? Is that what the divorce taught you, or were you trying to implement that during the marriage?
Definitely the first one. So I got divorced in 2018, and I've been suffering with a serious gambling issue for over 10 years. My inability to control that gambling and my lack of understanding around it, I could not understand why I did it, and that lack of understanding then led to self-sabotage, drinking, drugs, heavily binge drinking. Big rugby fan, played a lot of rugby. I'd be working in the city within a sales environment, so Thursday, Friday was a lot of time in the pub, downing pints, just surrounded by people, everyone's having a good time, this is normal, etc. And then the Class A potentially would come out. Then it would come, get to the weekend in that rugby environment again, heavily drinking. Sunday, then it's a roast with the family. It was just relentless. You're constantly just consuming alcohol. My wife asked for a separation, and it was very much around behavioural based. The fact that my inability to control these things. And it's funny because in your mind you're thinking, this is not me. I know I'm so much better. You know, who am I? I talk a lot about identity, and you know, it feels like we inherit our identity from parents, from teachers, when actually you don't really question who you are. What are your beliefs? What are your values? And then the point that you mentioned about when did I realize this? 3-4 months after my separation, I was in a car crash. So I was arrested for drink driving and wrote off my car. And wow. I think that whole experience of extreme ownership and acceptance just ignited me internally to be more authentic and be more vulnerable and take ownership for my actions and behaviors and my decisions. Because it's thinking about it now, I can remember the solicitor that's representing the time, he suggests, oh look, you know, maybe next time you run off and you don't tell the truth. And I'm sitting there going, that doesn't sit well with me at all. I'd rather I instantly admitted it. I said, look, I've been drinking, it's completely my fault. And it just felt so rewarding. It just felt like the right thing to do. And from that point onwards, it's like constantly do the right thing. Be authentic, be vulnerable, take extreme ownership for everything. Because once you accept and you take ownership, that's when you can drive change. We're speaking to hundreds of men that are struggling with whether it be divorce, self-sabotage, gambling, drinking, relationships, the inability, careers, finance. This is so complex, right? It's so complex. But we found that once they accept their situation, they can drive change and then ultimately drive a form of transformation and reignite their true identity. So I would definitely say that that was the trigger point for driving effective communication.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
So a lot happened there. You mentioned about the alcohol and the gambling. So what did the gambling look like for you, if you're comfortable in talking about it? And how did that kind of come to a head?
It started all probably early... late teens, where you're at school and people are talking about, oh, you know, you can get a football account, a betting account, and you can bet on the football and it's quite fun. If you get it right, you get a few extra quid, etc. And you try it, the first one you get right and there's a couple of quid and you think, oh, this is fun, this is easy, oh, this, it makes sport more exciting. Then over time, people introduce you to other forms of gambling. So poker was my downfall. I found it an absolutely fascinating game from a behavioral perspective, like understanding people's thought process, and then also a mathematical perspective. But you know, people ask me, like, did you play to win money? And it was never about money. It was about a safe environment that you can make decisions, get it wrong, and no one tells you off. There's a brilliant book by a guy called Nir Eyal, who wrote Indistractable. He talks about how humans need three things, which are autonomy, competence, and relatedness. And once I understood that, because he relates it to why children are obsessed with gaming. And for, you know, using that as an example, autonomy, the game allows them to make mistakes. There are no repercussions. It's not like a parent or a teacher telling you off for getting something wrong or putting their limiting beliefs on you. Then competence, you do well in the game. The game hits you with a load of dopamine, the reward chemical. It lights up. You go to the next stage. You get a trophy. It makes you feel great. Relatedness, you're talking to other people while playing the game, so you feel part of that whole connection, which is what we really crave, that connection with other humans, even though it is digitally. And once I understood that, I completely understood why I gambled, and I couldn't understand at the time, was because autonomy, I was in an environment where it didn't feel like I had autonomy in my marriage. I would come back from working a sales job where I was in the office at 7:30, left at 6:00, it was 6:30, London-based, hour commute. I'd come home having underperformed at work, being told what to do at work, told what to do at home. It felt like I didn't have any autonomy. And gambling just gave me this safe environment to do that. No repercussions. Obviously, this is in the moment, there were repercussions further down the line in terms of losing money, etc. And whenever the ex-wife found out, she would go absolutely ballistic. But I just couldn't understand at the time why I did it. But in terms of what that looked like, there would be times where I was so scared, is probably not the right word, but I just didn't want to go home back to that environment. So I would say that, oh, I'm just delayed slightly on the train. I'll be on the next train, I'm working, etc. But instead I'd just run to the bookies, watch some horse racing or dogs, etc. And it was just, it felt like freedom, even for that hour where I could just do what I wanted. I stopped working out, I stopped playing sport, and it felt safe. It's crazy to, I can hear what I'm saying right now, and it just at the time it felt so it just felt rewarding. But now I realize that that's absolute BS.
It's an addiction, right?
Absolutely.
So it's addictive for a reason. And the rewarding aspect of it sounded like, you know, what you were tapping into. Just for anyone who's listening and they're gambling and they maybe feel like, is it getting out of control? What were the signs for you that you were addicted to it?
So, oh, that's a really good question. So, I missed a couple of gatherings, whether it be work or social, where I would make excuses for the fact, oh, sorry, I can't go because I'm doing something else. And it would be because I was gambling. I'd either be in a tournament online, and as soon as you get kicked out of the tournament, whether it be in poker, like a bad beat or something, even though mathematically you should have won that hand, it just felt horrendous. It was this gut-wrenching feeling internally that it was, you know, this, it can't be like this. I'm missing social events. I didn't want to see people. It's obviously the financial aspect as well. I didn't get into serious debt. I had disposable cash, but that's not really the point. It was more about the control of the control of the behavior. And then I would punish myself for doing it by drinking, because that then shuts off your prefrontal cortex. You know, they're not thinking about it in the short term. But when you wake up in the next day, having not slept well because you've had a drink as well, it all then adds to the stress and anxiety.
Just going back to this car crash, which sounds like a real turning point for you. So you'd been drinking, you were in a car crash, you wrote off the car. Was someone else involved?
No, nobody else was involved. I'd played golf throughout the day with some friends, and at the time, I'd moved back to my parents because I was no longer in the marital home, and I drove quite a long way back to my parents' house, and it's always the case, isn't it? In terms of your you concentrate for 90% of the time, all the journey, and then when you really think you're nearly at home, you then switch off. So I was literally just around the corner. I clipped a wall, a large rock, and ended up flipping the car upside down. Absolutely horrific experience. I can remember, from a humor perspective, hopefully you'll appreciate this as a comedian, but I can remember crawling out. My shoulder was slightly cut. I was absolutely fine, thankfully. Just looking at this BMW upside down, I thought, oh my gosh, the engine's still running. I've got to crawl back in and turn it off. So I grabbed the car keys, went to press the button to turn the engine off, and the boot opened and all my golf clubs fell out. And then this kid was on his bike, because it was about 9 o'clock in the evening, and this kid rode past and went, mate, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. You wouldn't mind standing next to the car and let me take a picture, would you? And I just looked at him.
Oh my gosh. Wow, that's how you know it happened, you know, in the last few years. Like, he wanted an Instagram photo, didn't he, for his profile?
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. But thankfully, I didn't hurt anyone. I didn't hurt myself. Having never been in trouble with the police before, being arrested, spending a night in the cell, overhearing other people, other people in the prison screaming, shouting, deliberately hurting themselves so that they could then go to hospital and not be in the prison, was a horrific experience. And you know, the next day, I was supposed to be picking up the twin boys. I didn't have a phone. People were wondering where I was. They knew that I wasn't coping particularly well with the divorce. Naturally, they thought that I'd done something to myself, taken my own life. So it caused a lot of stress and anxiety with the family. It's but acceptance was definitely the main thing. And it's I can remember being in my cell, just thinking, what do I do? You know, what next? So I started working out. The only thing I could think of doing was doing a workout in the cell. Just started doing Insanity, which is a 30-minute HIIT session. And I just thought, I've got to shift my mindset immediately. which was quite an amusing situation.
Wow. So I'm just trying to think of the thought process of, like, you're in prison and you're like, I'm going to do a workout. How did you feel doing that workout? Did it help?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So this 4 month period from separation to the car crash, the first week that my ex and the twins moved out of the family home, because I had nowhere to go at the time, I said, look, you go to your parents, I'll stay here. That first week, I thought, I just, every night after work, I got two bottles of red wine, two pizzas, went home, gambled online. I was like, screw you, I'm not the problem here. I'm having a brilliant time, made some money. And I did that thing for every day for six or seven days. I can remember getting out of the shower on day seven, day eight, looking at myself in the mirror, and I significantly put on weight. I felt awful. You could see it in my face that I was hurting, that I was in pain. And I don't know what made me do it, but I just picked up the phone, hit record, pointed at myself, and just had a little conversation with myself about, this has to stop. You're overweight. You're on your own now. You don't know how to cook. This whole independence thing, some reality kicks in. All you're doing is proving her right. And the motivation goes, initial motivation goes from, screw you, I'm going to show you what I can do here. But then it changes to actually show yourself what you can do. And now I'm living this life of curiosity, like what else is capable. But the thought process around the workout was that, because I'd been immersing myself back in, I believe that is the barrier to entry for mental health is daily movement. So through Blue Mind, we talk a lot about daily movement. The fact that any sort of movement doesn't need to be a HIIT workout or a CrossFit session or 100K run or anything. Any sort of movement, whether it be a walk, is great for your mental health, because I'm not sure about you, Samantha, but it seems like most people don't move. And the neuroscience, the dopamine, the BDNF that you get from moving first thing in the morning as well, is just phenomenal. So in that moment, having been arrested in the cell, sitting, it's not like a hotel or anything. There is absolutely nothing in there apart from a toilet and a bed. I just thought, I'm slightly still drunk. I could do a workout here and completely sort my mindset out. So that was the thought process. I knew that it would reignite my mindset and get me back on into a better place, and not just sit there dwelling on the fact what I'd just done.
Yeah, there's definitely something ironic about you being in a prison cell doing a workout called Insanity to get yourself back to your mindset. But I like that.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's the ad break. Would you like some divorce social merchandise. Oh, yeah. Give me a divorce social tote bag. Give me a divorce social sticker and mug. All right, then. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Samantha Baines, B-A-I-N-E-S, that's my name, and you will get access to be able to join up to our Patreon. That supports the admin costs of the podcast. It also means you have access to merchandise and a 90s-style chat room where we talk about divorce and heartbreak and overcoming it and being fierce, amazing humans. Don't forget to leave a review of the podcast as well and hit subscribe on all your podcast platforms. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we're on Instagram and Twitter at divorcepod, and I'm at Samantha Baines. Enjoy this advert because it makes me 2p every time you listen. 2p isn't maybe the real amount. I've made that up as an approximation, but thank you anyway.
I just wanted to go back for a minute because you said you were missing a family gathering and your friends hadn't heard from you, and you said obviously they were worried I'd done something to myself. Why obviously were they worried? Had they expressed those worries to you before?
They hadn't no. I think that so I don't believe that I've ever had suicidal thoughts going through a divorce. But I do know, on this very rewarding journey of helping people through Blue Mind, that most men do. And whether it be shortly after the separation or after 6 months, where potentially another partner gets introduced, and that partner is going to be introduced to the kids, etc., these thoughts start to kick in. But I think at the time, it was the fact that you don't hear from someone should have been home at a certain time. You don't hear from them. The phone's off. Multiple people are trying to get hold of you. It's an emotion, isn't it? It shows that people care.
And how did you feel knowing that they thought that you might have done something to yourself?
Oh, absolutely horrific. I can remember that it was actually my ex-wife that came to pick me up from prison. She said, "Look, I'll come and get you." And I can remember being released and just sitting on this wall waiting for her to arrive. And when she did, I just completely broke down in front of her. And because at the time we were having conversations about, you know, do we give it another go? We've got two kids. We've recently renovated a house. And there's me thinking, oh my gosh, I'm completely cocking this up. I've spent 4 months improving my health. Things were improving at work. I completely kicked gambling to the side. I'd even gone to Vegas. I thought, went to Vegas with a few friends. And I thought, if I can go there and not gamble, that's like the ultimate stepping stone to knowing that this is all in my head, that it's all to do with the fact that I was lacking connection with other humans, and I didn't have this autonomy. So it was all going pretty well to then get arrested for drink driving. Just felt like absolutely, I was back to square one. Thinking of this now, it made me think of something that you said with Kate on Kate Daly's podcast, around you just knew it was over, because it went, as soon as there was me, a complete emotional mess. I've gone to hold her and I just felt absolutely nothing. It was just this cold feeling. And I thought, oh, this is weird. I'm in a really bad place. And yet your hug just feels empty, if that makes sense. And I can then remember being brought back to my mum and dad's, and my mum has just held me, where then felt the complete opposite, where it was just utter love. Like oxytocin is the love neurotransmitter, and I just felt all this love from my mum, and it was, you could just see that I'd caused them so much distress over the last 5-6 hours, because I wasn't available. It was probably longer than that. It's probably 10 hours. Extremely emotional. And my wife aunt said, "Look, you're not seeing the kids. Perhaps you want to come back to the marital home for a little while, just for a week, and you can see the kids every day," because I hadn't seen them for 2 weeks. And it's this is a slightly different conversation, but it feels like most of your listeners will understand that as a father, you agree to have children because you think you'll see them every day. To then have that taken away from you, and you only see them every 2 weeks is completely soul destroying. And you worry that how are they going to be influenced in that environment without you? And are they going to be told the truth? And there were threats of, I'm going to arrange for your family never to see the kids again. And you're thinking, this is all an exaggeration. This is not the brutal truth here. I believe I'm a good person. I'm struggling with my identity at the moment, and I just don't understand it, if that makes sense. So to be allowed to come back to the family home after this car crash and see them on a daily basis was just absolutely, absolutely brilliant. But shortly left again after a week, and that process from the car crash to then going to court 2 weeks later was really reinforced this acceptance and ownership, and just allowed me to push on in terms of my growth and personal development. Because I think there's a cool book, Dr. Carol Dweck, about mindset, and it's all about a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And I believe up until that that car crash, which is the Japanese have a word for it. They have a kensho moment. So you're forced to grow through pain. And then once you force to grow through pain, you then realize what it's like being elevated and growth. And I can now actually grow through insight. So I started reading, which was, again, absolutely fantastic. My managing director at the time handed me a book, and I was like, please don't give me that book. There's no way I'm going to bloody read that. I haven't read a book in 33 years. And it was all about rugby and business. And I thought, I'll give it a go because I've got an hour commute. And the book instantly spoke to me because I could relate it back to my rugby days. It was all about a winning mindset and culture and connection and mantras. And it was absolutely brilliant. And then instantly off the back, it referenced a few other books. I bought some more books. I've got over 100 books now. I read every day for an hour. And it's just, it's funny that, So myself and the other co-founders of Blue Mind, we regularly talk about the fact that in order to raise your consciousness and awareness, do you need to go through that adversity? Because it feels like most people only start to elevate once they've experienced that adversity, that kensho moment. So, because otherwise, people just don't get it. I mentioned to you that we go on these walks and talks every 2 weeks through the brand because we're encouraging men to talk. We're creating this safe space, this non-judgmental environment where they can feel that they can be vulnerable with people that get it, because they don't have that in their current situation.
I love that idea. That's great. And I love that you said about the concho moment, because I think my dad's death around the time when I was getting married, and then the aftermath of that, was the thing for me, that the kind of pain that I moved through to then start working on myself.
Sure.
But so I'm interested in how you reading lots of books then went to you kind of coaching other individuals, and mainly men, as you said, on their kind of divorce journey.
Through this whole acceptance thing, and then driving change and gaining insight from books and other people, from personal development programs, you realize that you can add the most value to somebody else by accelerating the healing process for them if they go through a similar thing that you went through. And through also understanding the fact that we're here to co-elevate, right? We're here to create things with other people. And I had a few friends that went through, the reality is that how already exists, right? It's okay. How do I get through divorce? Okay. I'm going to go and speak to people that have been through it, but didn't talk about it. So I reached out to a few other men that I heard over the years that got divorced. Some people gave me some insight. Some people didn't. Time being the biggest healer, right? So, but in the short term, that doesn't help at all, because it's real, it's brutal, it's extremely emotional. I'm coaching a few people at the moment going through this, but there seems to be a point where the hardest part for most men is when another man gets introduced into that third party. I remember you speaking about it. This whole third party piece.
It's interesting. People I've spoken to before, I think one man said he just had this real feeling of like, I want to beat him up, or like, I want to prove that like I'm more of a man or something than this new man.
Definitely. It's so raw. It's the, we have mental chatter in our head, right? So the mental chatter that goes on around, I designed that house, I paid for that house, how dare this other man that I don't know be in there and see my kids more often than I see them. This is fucking ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to stand for this. And then the fact that it's not, the ex-wife is not completely transparent as well about how much time he spends there. Yet I'm standing on the platform at the local station and he's there as well, but he doesn't stay the night. Like, it's all this type of thing. So your mental chatter's all over the place. But over time, and from gaining insight, I realized that it's all ego. The only person you are against is yourself. Like the importance of that message is vital, because it's got nothing to do with your ex or feelings for that ex. I truly, truly believe this. It is the fact that you believed that those things are yours, that you have this entitlement to those things, and you don't. Another man coming into the whole third party thing doesn't define your relationship with your children. Children only want one thing. And I made this mistake right at the beginning, in that every time I did have them, I knew that I was the money. So she will no longer have as much money. So when they're with me, I will absolutely spoil them. We'll go to the toy shops. They were only 3 or 4 at the time. We'll go to the toy shops, I'll get new toys, etc. And in the short term, they loved it. You know, happy in the now, all this dopamine from stuff, from external stuff. And then one of them turned around. It was one Saturday, I picked them up, and they're like, oh, awesome, we're going to the toy shop. Every time we see dad, it means we go to the toy shop. And I thought, hang on a minute, this is not good. They can't associate my time with them that they're going to get something for it. So I immediately put a stop to it. And again, through reading and through insight, I realized that the number one thing that children want is your time. And it feels like, while continuing on this personal growth journey, that I've come to the conclusion that my parents didn't give me their time. As an example, I really enjoyed my sport, but it was very, very rarely, I'm talking maybe once a year, that they would be on the touchline, like watching a game, and or even sitting me down and having deep and meaningful conversations. But you realize that they're doing the absolute best with the tools that they have because of the way that they were parented. But why are we not learning this? This conscious parenting, conscious relationships, it just absolutely baffles me. With Blue Mind at the moment, a lot of the stuff we're doing is healing. So it's accelerating the healing process for those people, men that we've talked about, divorce, self-sabotage. But actually, imagine if we can prevent these things? Why are we not talking about the root cause? Why are we not raising consciousness and awareness? There is a root issue why 50% or 42%, I think it was quoted on, I saw on your podcast, that relationships end and break up. There's a root issue there. We're all talking about the symptoms, that so-and-so leaves his socks on the floor or doesn't take the rubbish out, except these are all symptoms, right? If you think of a tree, these are the branches. There's a root issue. And the root issue, I believe, Jay Shetty talks about this a lot, in that it's attraction versus connection, in that you initially are very attracted to somebody, so physically, intellectually, but then also material as well, so what that person has. But we don't connect with that person, because it's usually in your 20s, right? you don't connect with that person emotionally or spiritually. And those are the two main ones, because the other things over time will deteriorate. Physically, you'll deteriorate. The materials could go away. And intellectually, again, if you've got fixed mindset, it's just going to stay the same. You're not going to grow. So why are we not teaching people to connect with each other emotionally and spiritually and talk about vision for the future, goals, you know, and what do you want to achieve in the next 2 years? How do you see our life being at 50, 60, 70, 80? Because the goals they talk about, those means goals in terms of children, house, and that's about it. But then you're 35, it's like you've got the rest of your life together. And more often than not, the woman is the mother and stays at home. Her career gets halted in terms of her progression. The man goes off, he elevates and grows within his environment. So if you don't grow together, you grow apart. And I believe that is such a common thing, speaking to men, and a lot of women have reached out to us as well, in that I want my man to change. I feel that he's holding something back. And it comes back to that vulnerability piece again, doesn't it? It's a case of men feel that because of probably the way they were parented and what society says a man should be like, oh, you know, don't cry, men don't cry, or that's not manly. It's like it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It's complete BS. We should be as males, we should be embracing our feminine side. That doesn't make us feminine, but it's about, you know, masculinity and femininity. And it's the same for females. You know, more and more women are going into the gym. I'm a big fan of CrossFit. You see, there's a huge increase the age of 40 plus of women investing in weight training, and they're in incredible shape. It doesn't make them masculine. It's about finding that balance.
I love some weights, but I wonder, it's interesting that you said about the, obviously if we're looking at a stereotypical, I mean, it is a bit of a 1950s stereotype, but that women stay at home and look after the kids and men go off and work. And you talked about men elevating in their career. Do you think that women who look after, who are the main sort of carers of children and the young educators of children, maybe they elevate in more of an emotional way in that respect? So you're drifting apart from each other because one's focus is career and one's focus is connection with children, I guess.
What a brilliant question. So the way, or what I believe, is that in terms of identity, a lot of men associate, and both sides, males and females, they associate their identity to the role that they play. So in terms of career, a lot of men are like, right, I'm the MD of this, or I am the whatever it be, whether it be a cleaner to the CEO, you associate your identity to the position that you have, but that's not who you are. So they create this attachment it's the same for females as well. They can create an emotional attachment to being a mother, but that's again not their true identity. That role evolves throughout the parenting cycle. And I have this conversation with my parents regularly because they believe that they are the parent and we are the child. And even though they're at 37 years of age, they still believe that they are tiered above me. And it's like, surely the ultimate goal is to become friends with your children. It has to be. It's a collaboration. And to then bring other children up the chain and make better humans. The All Blacks in Legacy talk about it brilliantly in terms of the shirt, that once you receive the shirt, you have a responsibility of giving it to the next generation in a better state than you received it. Shouldn't parenting be exactly the same? So I think going back to your question, it really is a case of its identity, that I believe the men, they focus so much on their career because they want to be providers. This is all coming from a place of love. They want to be a provider. They want to provide security. They want to bring more money, because society defines success in terms of external things, you know, what you have, what you can obtain.
Do you think that might be why some men struggle if a female partner starts to earn more than they do? From your experience of the men you've worked with, have you ever had that?
I have seen it. It wouldn't be fair for me to speak on behalf of somebody else. I haven't been in a scenario where that has been the case, so I don't know how I would react, but it's about comparison, isn't it? So I would guess from speaking to men that have been in that situation, they feel less worthy, right? less self-worth. But it comes back to the only person you're against is yourself. Because you compare yourself to, because you've paid a little scenario, you might have gone down the pub and you've spoken to John and Dave, and they've said, "Oh, I can't believe your wife wants more money than you. What sort of man are you?" They've questioned you. It's gone into your mental chatter, and you question yourself. It's all BS. It's all absolutely BS. If your wife is extremely talented at something, and she is being rewarded financially for that, we should be praising that. We should be absolutely praying. And as the male, you should be supportive. I believe this comes down to the fact that men are, or predominantly defined by what they can provide, but that is not the case usually for the female. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Surely, if we were to change the definition of success, and that it wasn't about external things, and it's about the being comfort in your own skin, then it'd be a very different conversation, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Should be about success, should not be about external things. But sometimes it's hard to get away from that, isn't it? Because everything around you is telling you that's what success is. So it's hard to remember.
100%.
But so in your recovery journey from your own divorce, you said that you did a workout in prison and then you started reading books. Were those the two main things, kind of getting moving and broadening your kind of mind, I guess, with all these books and interesting theories that you read? Or were there other things that helped you kind of get to where you are now?
Daily movement exercise was definitely one of the core pillars of that. The reading, the insight, the developing a growth mindset, whether it be a book, whether it be a personal development course, whether it meant proactively going out and identifying an environment where I would grow. So as an example, I've a host of mentors now, people I can call up on. People, it's, have a think about who you want to become, the type of person you want to become. Again, not the role that you want, not that I want to be this business owner, the person that you want to become. As children, you ask a child, you know, what do you want to be when you're older? And they don't really know. They'll say a fireman or football player or something, but what if we had a conversation with them about what type of person do you want to be? I believe if changing the narrative that way would be completely different in terms of what type of person do you want to become? So once I started thinking about that, I started to surround myself with people that I believed were good people, that have this the mindset of giving back as well. They wanted to help other people grow. I took myself off of Facebook. I took myself off Facebook, because what I found was, and I advise this to men that we speak to as well, is that every time you go on there, you're getting triggered because you see the ex doing something else, or you see, even if it was her birthday and 20 other people put on their picture of her and go, "Wow, the most wonderful person in the world, the most amazing mother." And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, okay, yes, good at." You're getting triggered, right? And you can just remove that. You can remove that distraction. So I think removing yourself from social media was another big factor. So I'd strongly advise that. And then once you're ready to come back to social media, I'd be quite brutal and remove the people, because you're gonna go on this new journey where you create a new identity for yourself. And I truly believe this is your true identity. I think from when you go to school, And those early 20s where you start working and stuff, you get pushed into this, into the society, and you don't express yourself so much. So you're reigniting your true identity by going through this adversity and pain of divorce. And I would be extremely brutal and remove people that no longer share your new beliefs and values. Seek some clarity around your beliefs and values. You know, what do you truly believe in? Question whether you inherited those from somebody else. Does it actually matter to you? Is it important? So get answers to what are your values? What are your beliefs? What is really important to you? And create a vision for your future. There's an absolutely simple but brilliant little task or a concept that you can look at called the three MIQs, which is the three most important questions in terms of what do you want to experience? Three columns. What do you want to experience before you die? How do you need to grow in order to experience those things? And once you've done all that, how would you give back to the world? Because we are designed to give back. It feels great to help other people. And once I got some clarity around those things and put it in my bathroom and looked at it every day, it was like, awesome. Okay. I'm not going to do anything else apart from, if it's outside of this. So there was no, there's no need to gamble or drink excessively. And it just made such a difference. I've put on there that I want to build programs to help people get through all this, which is why we're investing so much in Blue Mind and getting that off the ground and working with people. So the exercise, just as someone I said, the exercise is absolutely vital because we're not designed to carry excess weight. If you can move, it's going to create really good. People think, oh, exercising is vanity, but self-care is not selfish. So regular exercise will release good chemicals in your head, which then will make you more creative. You're going to function, you'll be in a better mood. You're going to be a better version of yourself for other people.
And that doesn't have to be weights, right? It can be walking, going for 100%. A walk. That's what, a part of the reason I got a dog, because I was like, she makes me, I have to take her for a walk every day. And that's good.
Definitely. It doesn't have to be anything excessive. Just move. What I love about the whole weights thing is that there's a lot of research and data now around the fact that our muscles deteriorate from the age of 40. I think it's called sarcopenia, by 3%. So if we can commit to weight training in our 30s and 40s, you are going to be a stronger 60, 70 year old. And I don't know about your parents or friends who parents, etc., but my parents are approaching 70 and they really struggle to move because they've never been to the gym. They don't walk, they don't do anything. And you just think, you can prevent that. Again, it comes back to prevention. If we had a more open conversation about, like, what can you do now that will help your future, and weight training is a big part of that. And you don't need to weight train very often. You just need to do two sessions a week for 15 minutes. But
that sounds doable to me. Movement.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. There's a cool thing called the Big Six, which you can do. It is literally two sessions a week, and it's 15 minutes. That's if you can't find half an hour a week to then be more functional when you're older, then there's something seriously wrong, I believe.
So now, looking back, how do you feel about the alcohol and the gambling? Is it completely out of your life?
Yeah, it is important that I'm continue to be authentic and vulnerable here. So alcohol, what's the date today? So beginning of this year, I wanted to challenge myself to go the whole year without drinking. So it definitely improved, but it's become a subconscious behavior. So this whole time we're constantly building a subconscious mind. And what that looks like, every Thursday, I could go Monday to Wednesday, Thursday lunchtime, absolutely fine. But then as soon as Thursday after evening hits, it's like, okay, my body, having behaved like this for 20 years, is craving the sugar of alcohol. But you can replace a bad habit with a good habit. That's all these things are. They're just habits. Like, we are creatures of habits. routines, patterns, right? So you just got to replace it with something else. It's very difficult to go cold turkey. So with the whole alcohol thing, I don't plan on living a life of sobriety, but I do want to completely recode myself and not have that subconscious behavior around alcohol. So I think it's 120 days, or every 125 days in at the moment, which is, I don't think about it at all. I sleep a lot better. I don't have hangovers. But again, am I considering a life of sobriety? I wouldn't, not at this stage. I'm undecided. So the alcohol is under control. In terms of the gambling, I went 4 years, I thought 3.5 years without gambling at all. But because of the mindset and the fact that I've developed an understanding around neuroplasticity and this ability that we have to rewire our brain, I wanted to see, can I go back into that environment and be in control? And it was very interesting. So back in November, I tested it for a couple of months, and it felt like I was in complete control. Gone was this need of losing some money, running to the cash machine putting some money back in. I really enjoyed it, and that's why it should be there. So I tried some online poker for a couple of months. Do I need to be doing it? No, I don't. But I started doing it every 2 weeks, where I play a little tournament, and I love it. It's really good fun. I haven't done it for a couple of months because that need hasn't been there. But with all these things, I'm not a believer in completely removing these things. It's about understanding why you do it, coming back to that root cause again. And once I realized that there was an addiction for all those years because of autonomy and competence and this relatedness, the fact that I didn't have these things in my life, I feel like I do have those things in my life now. So there is no need, and there's so much more control over those things.
If anyone's listening and they can relate to your story, maybe they're in that place that you were of alcohol and gambling, and you know, they're thinking, I don't want to hit my car crash moment. What words of wisdom or advice would you offer them?
Self-reflection. I would take out a piece of paper. I think I'm a big believer of thinking in ink. So take down a piece of paper, make a list of what you believe those destructive behaviors are, and literally make a decision on, are you in control or not? If there's any indication that you're not, I would talk to somebody about it. Whether you know someone else that has been through a similar thing, I think talking is so important. That's what's so great about the walks and talks that we do, is that most people just want someone to listen to them. They don't have anybody that will listen. And we're not very good listeners. You're not taught how to listen. Like, people hearing this or listening might think, what do you mean? But there is such a thing as effective listening.
That's why podcasts are great, because you can't talk back.
Exactly. But we found, like, on these walks, just by creating that safe, non-judgmental environment, men just open up, and they're like, even something which we're going to really look into, because I think there's going to be a lot of value there, but single dads with daughters. So I have two sons, so I have not been through this, but we have a number of single dads with daughters. And you know, naturally, the older they get, they're going to start having their periods, etc. These dads are investing in books and insight to bring themselves up to speed, because it's unconscious incompetence. You don't know what you don't know, right? And you know, how many dads are doing that? Probably not, because if they're in a relationship, it's left to them. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's most dads with that whole post-separation, post-divorce, they are super scared about these topics. And the fact that are they in a position to help? Are they in a position to educate and stuff? So we're encouraging people to gain insight. These limiting beliefs about, oh, it should just be the mum that discusses it. Absolutely not. Why not look into it and all these things? It's I think it's absolutely vital. So I'd encourage people to talk, confront the brutal truth. It's so important. The truth will set you free. You might feel like you don't want to tell the truth, or you don't feel comfortable telling the truth, but I would encourage you to be vulnerable, confront the brutal truth, accept the situation you're in, because then once you accept, you can take ownership for it and you can drive change.
Great advice. And also, I think, you know, single dads with girls, you know, learning about periods and bras and stuff, I think it's quite a nice idea to learn together, maybe, you know, and embrace that honesty, you know, coming from a woman who had a period when she was younger and got a bra for the first time. You know, I think it's you probably know that your dad isn't going to know about that stuff. But if your dad kind of sits down with you with a book and you both learn together, I think that could be actually a nice bonding experience.
Yeah, definitely.
So where can people find out more about the Blue Mind approach and find you online and things?
We're on the usual suspects. So we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn. Instagram, you can find us at the Blue Mind approach. You can find me on Instagram at Mark Kosminski. We've got a website as well, which is bluemindapproach.com. So at the moment, it's very much around accelerating that healing process for others through coaching and group workshops and the walks and talks. We're going to be hosting some events abroad where men will be able to get away for 2-3 days and just surround themselves with other men and have these conversations and gain insight. And within the next 12 months, we'll be launching an e-learning platform, a male growth platform, where we'll be gaining insight from experts in this, because we hold this vision of prevention. We want to get to the root cause, and we want to attack the education system and start having these conversations in school and even make it a subject. I do genuinely believe that the earlier that we can have these conversations, then we're going to prevent divorce, reduce male suicide rates, obesity, all this physical, mental and emotional illnesses.
Amazing. Well, sounds good. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Great to be on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you
can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Please leave a review. Love you forever.